pale horse. The man who sat on him was death.
And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Another CSM 15 election candidate panel. I am your host, Alexei Abkard. Joined today by my co-hosts, Andy Astronaut.
Hey there.
And Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
Andy and Artemis were not able to make our first panel, so if you're just tuning in, we did do two of these, the first of which is out on the site right now. Go check it out. It was pretty cool. Featured a lot of smaller candidates with some really great discussion around some topics that don't usually get a lot of airtime, like the Eve storyline and how the CSM might interact with that. But today, we've got some heavy hitters. In particular, one, Brisk Rubal.
How are you doing, Alec? It's good to be back on the show.
Doing very well, sir. It's good to see you again. Phantomite.
From Same Great Taste. Excited to be here.
Which I have to say is an amazing line name. Tastes great, less filling.
I can tell you for sure that it is actually entirely my invention as well, but you should have seen some of the horrible ones we rejected.
We also have Darius Caliente from United Federation of Conifers.
Thanks, and thanks for having me, and I just want to get it out there first. We killed Brisk's widow.
God damn it.
Ooh, spicy. And Duras, believe is from Moist, is that?
That is correct. Well, technically we have a dot at the end, so you got to remember to pronounce that.
Use Moist Dot.
Ah, there we go.
Now let's. So I think people are pretty familiar with Brisk, but maybe you could just give a few words, Brisk, and then I'd like to have the other candidates introduce themselves real quick before we jump into our first topic.
Oh, sure. I appreciate that, Alec. And again, Andy, Artemis, Alec, I love being on Declarations of War. This is my favorite podcast. So I'm glad you guys had me on. No, it is. It's the only like real like podcast left. So that's why I like it. I'm Brisk with the Initiative. I also fly in Karma Fleet with the Goons. And I'm one of these line members who has no responsibility, but everybody seems to know. So I'm enjoying campaigning again and looking forward to talking to you guys again on the show.
I am characterized as a low set candidate. I feel that my ideas touch upon a very large part of EVE Online, not just low sec, and I am dead set on those ideas, and I look forward to discussing them.
Darius or Duras?
That's going to be a problem.
That was very confusing.
I'll just your full name the whole time. Darius Caliente.
There we go. Hey, thanks again for having us. I'm Darius from United Federation of Conifers, Alliance Exec, Head FC, whatever you want to say. Diplo, I guess, but I'm not very diplomatic, so this should be fun.
The best kind of Diplo.
FCs make great Diplos.
Right?
Duras.
Hey, yeah, Executive Moist, been running this kind of small wormhole corp for many years. I'm wearing a lot of hats in that, so I kind of have to interact with a lot of the systems in EVE, and I'm looking forward to talking about a lot of the structure generation, just more ways to get more conflict drivers out there. Plus a lot of like kind of wormhole small QOL stuff.
Well, that's going to touch on a lot of the topics we're talking about here. Let's kick it off with what I think would be top of mind for most of the audience, conflict drivers in EVE. Several of you seem to share the opinion we don't have enough of them. Phantomite, how do you bring this up to CCP in a way that's going to get us like positive direction? And what do you think that direction should be?
I think that looking at the past is a brilliant way, because the past before moons were changed to active mining showed that passive moons at the time were a constant source of excellent fleet battles in low and null sec. Some people characterize passive moons as being only in the hands of the most powerful people, and perhaps to some extent that's just simply correct. They still had to fight for it. People still attack them. With CCP, I would be able to tell them my personal experience, but I'd also be able to show them PvP videos I've made in the past, which have significant portions of those videos dedicated to moons sparked by the value that passive moons once held on an alliance level, which they don't hold now.
Let's move to Darius. Darius Caliente, you have recently inherited a rather large portion of space during a NullSec conflict. Do you also believe we don't have conflict drivers anymore?
No, I think there's tons of conflict drivers. I think too many people have blued too many other people. And typically, if you hear about a lack of conflict drivers, I find it comes from the large groups that have blued half of New Eden. I mean, we constantly have fights. They never stop. Sometimes I wish they did. I'd like a break from time to time. I think, you know, more reasons to fight is always good, but I think there's quite a few good conflict drivers right now. You know, even back when we were living in Syndicate, I mean, we were fighting constantly, taking moons back then. Athanors, I think, are actually a lot of fun to fight over because they don't do a great job of defending themselves. I mean, hell, it was last year we got a Vendetta kill on an Athanor. Vehement? Whatever the super is. See, I should know that, and I don't. Vendetta. So we got that kill, you know, on a moon timer. And I think Athanor timers are actually a lot of fun to fight over. I really enjoy them. I think structure timers are fun. Ansiblex timers are fun, although the structure timers for flex structures should be 15 minutes, not 30 for that repair timer. So I think there's quite a few conflict drivers already. I think this Trig stuff, I mean, Rareboss has been nonstop content. I think that there's interesting ways that CCP is doing it. But as far as introducing new ones, we'll see. Abandoned structures, I think, will be a lot of fun. I think adding more ways for players to make income off of conflict is a good way to drive it. Because when people can make ISK, or at least make things they can sell for ISK, as an outcome to fighting, a lot of the PvPers come to the party. So I think that's a big change that I would like to see, is more profit from PvP.
What does that look like to you? Obviously CCP can do it a couple different ways, but just as an example.
So I think, 100% loot drop obviously saw some gaming, but I think definitely we can do better than 50-50. 75, 80% loot drop on a regular basis, I think, wouldn't be the worst thing. Yes, it stops removing a lot of ISK from the game, but there's a lot of players that don't have a lot of ISK. And a lot of those are PvPers who don't have the same means of making money that a lot of miners and mission runners and even NullSec ratters have. So I think that increasing loot drops is one way. And I would love to see something introduced akin to the siphons that were introduced, but for Athanors, so you can actually leech some moon goo off an Athanor somehow and force a fight over that. I'd love to see something like that implemented. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Brisk, you've been quiet as a member of one of the largest coalitions in the game.
That's not fair. I think
I've been quiet. I've been listening to what the guys are saying. I agree with Darius and with Phantom Mike. I would definitely like to see some kind of passive income sources, because I do think those were something to fight over. To Darius's point about the blowing up of half of the game, I think the reason why I'd like to see more conflict drivers for the big null blocks is for exactly that reason. And it's not because they blew up all those groups. It's why did they blew up all those groups? And the result, and typically when you see the big alliances and the big coalitions out there that have non-invasion packs or non-structure packs with each other, it's because engaging in that level of fighting on their borders is not fun, and their players don't want to do it. So it's easier to cut a deal to not fight than it is to go and fight in a system that is just pure cancer to deal with. They don't want to deal with Entosis basically griefing. They don't want to deal with the random hitting of structures and then setting up timers that nobody ever forms for. They don't want to have to deal with that type of just, you know, griefing kind of, I guess it's not even grief, it's just annoying kind of behavior that you can do to poke at a big group and then never actually come and fight them. So I think that's part of the problem. When our soft system for big groups is designed around small gang warfare, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me and never has, and when it becomes more profitable and a better, you know, most effective tactic to take one set region, build it up completely, and then never leave it, that doesn't create conflict. That creates turtling and that creates stagnation. And I hate using that word because I don't think Eve is stagnant, but I do think that the era of a lot of the big alliances and the big coalitions fighting each other has passed. And part of that is because of the way the systems work and the mechanics work that does not incentivize those guys fighting each other. The only thing they have to fight now for is good fights or random, you know, the kind of, I don't like this person, so I'm going to go blow up his stuff. You know, the kind of test versus GOTG type thing is more the what we see today than the old school. This guy has something that I want, so I'm going to go take it. And I think that's a mechanics issue, and I think that's something that CCP can remedy if we can come up with some good reasons that will get alliances moving around and get groups to find that fighting is more profitable and more fun than signing diplomatic agreements.
I'm curious about Duris's perspective on this, because in Wormholes, it seems like there is very, very little fighting over this guy has something I want. And yet there's a distinct lack of blues, or at least from the outside looking in. Is that a misconception that I have about wormhole space?
Don't forget that in wormholes, when you blow up a citadel, it spews half the stuff out, which can be quite valuable.
Yeah, so I think that's... I will never claim I speak for 100% of wormholes, because there's a bunch of people in there. A lot of them won't necessarily talk to each other a whole ton all the time, just because everyone's cut off from each other. There's people you run into repeatedly. You might say hi. But yeah, for the most part, to answer, I guess, the first question about if there aren't a lot of blues, there's lots of people, at least in my experience. You could also probably talk to like Izuki and Laura Seko about this, that you might be frenemies with. If one of you is getting evicted, you might call them and say, hey, could you help defend me? But day-to-day basis, if you run into each other in your chain, you're absolutely going to try to blow each other up, like 100%. I think that's what a lot of relationships in wormholes kind of come down to, because most people there want to blow each other up, but also to a certain degree, an eviction is a lot of effort that you only really go through if you really think you can get a lot of loot out of it, or you really don't like the person there. And for the most part, most people like having other people around in wormholes, because that means there will be more people around to fight. If you run through your chain, you know, a whole bunch and you can't find anyone to fight, you know, that's not as fun. It's more interesting if, you know, you go through your chain, five or six of these are occupied and a couple of them are online in each, and maybe we can try to gank somebody. So I think that's generally true. I don't know. I'd say that's a 50-50 mechanics and culture thing. Part of it is just the fact you can't consistently, if you blue someone, like blue them, you will not consistently be next to them to actually help them or have them help you. Unless you live in the same system, you're just kind of randomly run into people. You will see people do like longer term, you know, blueing each other things. Like there was the whole war kind of, short war, skirmish, whatever you want to call it recently between HK, Laserhawks, Inner Hell, plus some other people they had with them, like Warren Wormhole, against a bunch of other people. I won't list everyone because there's a bunch of people in, but like the informal frigate hole collision. You'll occasionally see people like work together consistently like that, but that's more the exception rather than the rule. As for talking about like the reasons to fight over and the structures to fight over, a lot of wormholes, you know, we're going to get connections to low and null, and you know, we go out there and we try to fight people. We're still interested in having people around there to fight because we're still going in that space. And as I also mentioned earlier, taking out someone's citadel, unless it's in Athanor, can be a big deal. You got to put together a decent number of people for that. So I am still very much interested in there being things and objectives moved over to smaller, less defendable structures, just because that gives people something to fight over that you're not going to have to commit to saying, I have to be able to defend against both, you know, the damage and E-War from an Astra, plus whatever defensive fleet they come in. Because if that's the case, you got to be more prepared for that. Versus you can go and maybe, you know, just a couple guys, if you have a flex structure for, say, Moongoo, like if we said, hey, let's move the, let's take the old Moongoo extraction mechanics of old, let's move that to a flex structure that, you know, can't be in Citadel gun range or anything. It's, you know, doesn't have a whole lot of EHP. You could have a small gang shoot that and start a fight, potentially. You don't have to commit to, you know, sieging a Citadel. So I think it'd be nice if there's like a stepping stone kind of between Citadels and just nothing to kind of ring the bell to get people going.
Don't you think that the existing flex structures already provide that?
They're good. But it's one of those things, I'm not saying that the current stuff is bad. I would just enjoy seeing more of it. And I think we can fill some of the stuff that people would like to see with these smaller structures. A lot of people are talking about, and I would love to see local becoming some sort of service potentially, so that you can take it out if you want to try and hunt better. And that also gives then something for people to fight over. Say, I want to have this intel quickly, or I want to take it away from someone. Then you've got a structure you can shoot to do that. And then if people want to keep it, they have to fight you there. And if they don't keep it, then it's easier for you to try and find people to fight. So I'm not saying that the current stuff is bad. I just think it would be beneficial to have just more options out there for people.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I would love to see local as a service. I think that would be amazing. But I mean, I lived the last, you know, 2 years of UFC, and we spent 2018, you know, fighting snuff, I'd say almost every weekend, and 2019 with Init showing up almost every weekend. And you know, 90% of those fights once or twice were over like a fort, but most of those were over flex structures.
True. I mean, your experience will be different from mine as well. You're in Null way more than me, and you've also just got more dudes you can fly with. So I guess I'm coming at this a little bit from someone who isn't going to be there as often. So my fights don't happen with that as often. And I'm usually running just a smaller group that like starting and sieging, we could siege in Athanor, but we, you know, might not be able to deal with what comes to defend an Athanor as well as something that might come to defend, like, on a whim, a small flex structure. But I think the current systems are, like, doing okay as is, but I don't see any reason to add some additional options for people to fight over.
There's a small ganger who has quite recently been hired to reinforce just so many flex structures against Init and Conifers and Conifer allies. I will say, I don't see them really as a small gang objectives. It requires, you know, if you're going to come in a small gang, like 10 to 15 people, it requires you to come in specialized fits. You got to sit there for a while, even with that number. If you're a small gang group roaming around, that's not really a viable target for you. I've heard talk about tweaks to the ESS, which is cool. When I see an ESS in system, I get really excited. One, if I go there and no one challenges me, I might get a little bit of a payout. If I go there, there's a fair chance someone will challenge me because all of local gets broadcasted. Like, hey, this is where this dude is at. So there's something there where small gang could use objectives that are either not based on reinforcing something or are, you know, the reinforcement is not so heavily tied to a DPS.
Yeah, you would need to reduce EHP, or kind of as Darius was saying, having benefits for PvP, adding more things where if you successfully do it, you get some kind of payout, you get something out of it if you can successfully attack it.
Yeah, the ESS... go ahead, Darius.
Oh, sorry. Like, people mentioned like the siphons for, you know, Moongoo. If we added Alliance income as some sort of smaller structure. I keep saying flex just because that's the example of a flex structure. I don't mean it has to be exactly like the current ones. This is just theoretical. But you could make it so that, hey, if you siege, you know, you shoot at someone's thing and you, or you do whatever, you hack it, whatever, you do it successfully, uncontested, you like get to just scoop out a bunch of the Moongoo. You could do it like that, potentially.
That's, I was going to say, I think DSS is a great point that Alec brought up, because I'd love to see more risk and more reward out of the ESS. When we roam, we always hit them. You know, it's just one of those things that makes sense to go after when you see them. But, you know, I'd like to see it collect, you know, instead of 5 or 10% of the ratting payout, let's make it 25 or 30%, but let's like triple the bonuses so there's even more reward to putting one down. And then to defending it at the same time. I think ESSs are actually a great way to do that. The other way that we've had success when we roam, and we do it every time now, is we always make sure we have an Entosis link, because nothing gets people to react like activating an Entosis on something.
But then you run away.
Oh, no, we take the fight. No, we take the fight. That's the only reason we do it.
If they just let you reinforce, the nodes come back up, and then they automatically tick up.
Yeah, we go back sometimes for them. We're willing to travel a bit, so we've definitely gone back just to force the fight. Or we watch Timer Board and we'll go third-party Node Wars. I think that's a underutilized aspect of getting fights. Taking a small skirmish group to upcoming timers is often a great way to get some PvP.
Well, we are starting to get into one of our next topics, which is alliance-level income. As cool as it would be, like, iHub upgrades force an ESS spawn, so everyone has them, and they're worth a lot more than they are now, like you're talking about. That's pretty cool. But let's talk about alliance income as a broader topic. Since the removal of moons, there has been a definite, not removal of moons, excuse me, a change from passive moons that are centrally collected to active moons where tons of people have to get involved to mine them. There's definitely been a lot more challenges to get money from members into your organization without like very manually intensive mechanics. And I'll also point out that a lot of new features that Eve has rolled out, like wormhole space, the advanced changes for the work walls, talking about abyssal space, all that stuff isn't taxable in the traditional sense, as opposed to, say, anomaly ratting, which has gotten nerfed repeatedly. So alliances struggling to find money, it wouldn't be the weirdest thing for me if that was true. What do you guys think about that issue? What's the right level of alliance income, and how can we get mechanics that make sense that help support it?
I think it's important to note that between low sec groups and null sec groups, there are very different opportunities for how the alliance itself makes money. In NullSec, it's not the entire picture, but there's a lot more opportunities for them to collect small, but over time adding up, cuts from marketing, trade amongst the group, refining, things like that. Whereas in LowSec, those opportunities typically don't exist. LowSec, it's kind of the situation where if you're part of a LowSec group, you've just got to go out and do your LowSec activities or use your alt in a NullSec alliance to generate your money for the large part.
I think it's hard to say what the actual level is, because I think we're in a period of flux right now. I think overall, as part of the scarcity changes, I think CCP is trying to figure out what a healthy economy looks like and what a healthy income level looks like. And I think that's not just on the player level, but it's also on the corporation and on the alliance level. So until we have a better idea of what normal and what healthy is supposed to look like, I think it's hard for us to say what's a solid number to balance passive income against, which sucks, because I think that means we're going to have to wait a little while before, if we can even convince CCP to go back to passive income, since they took that out of the game for a reason. It's going to be hard for us to figure out exactly what a good number is. But it should not be so lucrative that, at least in my opinion, it should not be so lucrative that it stifles out other forms of income generation. At the same time, it should not be so cheap that nobody cares and it doesn't become anything that anybody values. So that striking that medium is going to be difficult, and I think they're probably not going to do it right on the first try.
Frisk, couple of things there. It's more of a sort of question to see your point of view on it. you say that CCP I'll do that a second. How would you answer that question if we were talking a year ago before the changes to mineral volumes?
I think a year ago it was not as necessary, but I think that because they've made so many changes to ratting, so many changes to mineral production. I mean, if you guys have seen, I don't know if you watched the Meta Show, but we talked about it last week. The April 2019 mineral mining numbers in Delve was something like 9.8 trillion ISK generated in the month of April. In April of 2020, it was 1.8 trillion. I mean, it was down almost 8 trillion ISK in value over the year because of all the changes. So that's a significant hit on corporation and alliance income, because they're not getting the same income that they would have got from reprocessing fees and taxes and stuff like that they would have otherwise gotten. So I think a year ago, it was much harder to justify passive income at the alliance level because the big alliances were making so much money. But now that income stream has kind of, I won't say it's dried up, but it's significantly less than it was before, I think it's a lot easier for us to go to the devs and say, hey, put a goodie back in here that hopefully will get us some more fights, where we couldn't have justified that a year ago.
And you say that passive moon mining was removed for a reason. I've got an answer for that, but would you like me to go first if I was going to ask you what your reason was?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I very much feel that for several years up until the removal of passive moons, there was a sort of prevailing, might even say hive mind attitude, that passive moons was simply money for nothing. When it's become apparent since, I think this is something you agreed with me on previously, that it wasn't money for nothing. It required a lot of work, but the work was fun because it was PvP.
Absolutely, I agree with that. I think the reason why the devs pulled it out was they were starting the process of trying to reduce the income streams in the game. And you look at passive income, you look at the way the Moongoo used to work, it was an alliance level asset. The alliances had to fight over it, but the average line member player never really saw any of that money other than through SRP, if they noticed it at all.
Yeah, so I contest that, because I think that's different levels for different alliances.
I mean, I'm sure it's different for different groups. I think, you know, but I think in the overall scheme of things, what I think is CCP was looking at ways that we can reduce money entering the economy, and they looked at the ways that the average player would feel the least and went with those first. And I think that's why they hit passive income back then. And I guess I also think they probably thought that going to active moon mining would be a good way to transition people away from anomaly mining, which they knew was out of whack and they were going to hit anyway. So I think a lot of these changes have been in the making for a while. I don't think the scarcity idea is anything really new. I remember asking Larrikin in CSM 13, it was in the minutes, you know, if they thought that the current levels back then of 2018 of income generation were sustainable, and they all said no. So I knew that we all knew that this was coming. The handwriting was on the wall, and I think that was the first step. But I think, frankly, they've done enough on the other side now that they can look at potentially going back and giving us something else that can generate content that provides something that the alliances will fight over, because we know that they've done it in the past, and it won't be breaking to the economy if they do it right.
Say this, the change away from passive moons hasn't been entirely negative. There have been tons of fights over work rules being tackled in belts, lots of content in terms of hunting mining fleets that wasn't really around before. It's put a lot more targets on field, so I don't want to knock it as a totally content-reducing thing. I don't think that would be fair or true.
I think that Rorquals have been one of the most fantastic content drivers that have ever existed in Nullsec for small, medium, and large fleets to take part in, to spark things. But I don't think that giving taking away basically one of the biggest Alliance fleet opportunities for PvP and giving it to giving the PvP opportunity to a few miners who are running it instead of it being an Alliance level asset. I don't think it's been worth it. And there's plenty more that places where Rorquals can be other than just on moons as well.
See, I think that's a really weird way to look at it. So first of all, I should say up front, I think the removal of passive moon mining was one of the best changes they've made to the game. We were in Syndicate at the time. PL still owned a lot of the moons there. The large groups were able to hold large swaths of moons, and there wasn't a lot small groups like UFC could do. I mean, if you want to talk about Alliance income, back then when we started, the Alliance income was my personal wallet. I funded everything. When we were in Syndicate, we still charged people to jump clone in structures because we needed the money to pay for fuel blocks. That's changed now. We definitely do a better job, and the reason we do that is moons. I mean, we set our tax rate on the moons. We took a bunch in Syndicate, even held them after we left Syndicate until Innit wanted all the Syndicate moons. Now they have them. We've got our moons out here in Pierblind. Our membership, I think, would lose their minds if we went back to passive income or if it went to Alliance income for the moons. They love the fact that they can go out and mine. And I mean, for us, moons are an Alliance-wide activity. We pick a moon we want when we find one. We go out as a group. We bash it. We take it. We drop our Athanor. And the entire Alliance gets to mine it. They go on the calendars. And, an R64 is worth 20 to 25 billion ISK on a two-month pull. You get a couple of those going and you get, we only have, 100 pilots, probably 50 real people in UFC. That goes a long way to putting ISK in everybody's wallets. We don't need SRP. We don't need those things. And off of the refining taxes alone, we get enough to keep fueling the Athanors. So I think the move has been awesome. I think it's been the biggest content driver that we've had. Is fighting over Athanors. We've had tons of fun fighting for them. And they're actually a really good change for the game. I think it's been a really healthy change. And I love, catching Rorquals and Coveters and that on them, because Athanors are so weak, they can't hurt you alone.
I want to bring Duras into this so we get a wormholer perspective on the Alliance income question.
That's going to be a weird thing from my perspective, because I'm running such a small group. A lot of it is, and a lot of what we do is not like directly or officially taxable. So our stuff honestly does come down to, we know basically everyone we fly with, and it's like, hey, okay, we've all made an agreement. We're going to run some PvE sites. We're going to do X or Y, or we've got thing, and we're all going to donate a bit. We've got corporate industry type of stuff we do to buy stuff off people that they produce and then flip it for profit for corp. But in terms of the actual tools that exist there, none of those are really applicable for a group of our scales or for what we do, in terms of making Alliance level income. Because all the loot from, sleepers, for example, that's all blue loot. None of that is taxable, really. It all has to be done basically on hey, we need to make sure everyone salvages these sites and gives that to corp or something like that. We do a PI buyback kind of thing. And do some industry with that. But yeah, it's none of the existing tools really work for someone who's based purely in wormholes. If they were going to change that, I mean, you could add, some kind of Alliance level, if they changed moons back to passive and then they made wormholes moons mineable, you could do that. But I'm not certain that's a good change, because the point is that Nullsec has those moons, and that wormholes should generally have something different materials wise to keep it unique. So I'm not even sure if that would be the best way to go about it. But yeah, these systems, at least in the current state, there is no, in my experience, Alliance level income for wormholes other than the stuff that you are personally enforcing because everyone agrees to do it. That's going to be different for some wormhole groups that do have some Nullsec presence, but yeah, not for any of the small guys that only are there in a system.
So I wanted to just mention, talking about what Darius and Phantom I said. I think, first of all, I think in terms of Rorqual mining, the way that these changes, the anomaly changes, have essentially made having a Rourke on grid doing actual mining in an anomaly doesn't make a lot of sense anymore. It's not worth the risk. So what that has done is it has essentially restricted most Rourke mining to Athenors on moons. And I understand Darius' point about this is great content for small groups and that they like fighting over Athenors and stuff, but moons were just as good. In fact, they were faster because you could get in there, you could clean out the moons relatively quickly, you could put your sticks up on those moons and start generating income right away. You didn't have to wait for a month to get a good pull. So
simpler in a way.
And it was a lot simpler. I mean, talking about Syndicate, I agree 100% because I remember one of the first things that I did when I joined Initiative in 2017 was we went back up and wiped out all of NCDOT's moons in Syndicate and took them over. And that was a good solid month and a half of good content, good fights. We got pushed out. We ended up back in NPC space. They blew up all of our staging structures, but we could still fight them because we were, you know, Syndicate is the joy of NPC space there. So we went back out as soon as they were gone and went and did something else. We went back and took those moons again. So that constant ability to hit back and not have to worry about things like a Rourke tethering and, you know, being unattackable or having to wait 7 days in order to get to a final timer on blowing one of those things up. It was a lot faster tempo of operations. And I think that kind of provided some of the more fast content that I think some of the big groups prefer. I know that the longer drawn out stuff is easier. It helps defenders get time to plan things out and those types of things. But at the same time, it also drags things out and turns a lot of this work, it turns a lot of what would be generally good content into another chore. And you can never be sure that the guy's going to form for which timer. So you can't get your guys ready to go and out there fighting and pumped up because you could just be sending them out there to do nothing but a structure bash. And that's fine. It's content. It's nice to do. But you do a bunch of those and it gets pretty boring pretty quickly. People stop logging in. And then the next time that you need somebody to come out and show up because there is a fight, they're not going to do it. So, you know, some of these large groups will call CTAs for almost anything, and the result is they don't get the numbers that they should because nobody takes them seriously. And that's part of it's a tactic in the game, but it's exacerbated by the way the mechanics work.
So
it's like it kind of alliances that can show the best leadership are the ones that get the people following them, or in a way. With that CTA fatigue that some other alliances have faced in the past, isn't it?
I mean, it has done three, I think. We've had three CTAs in 18 months. So when we call one, people show up. I mean, the last one we did was 2 weeks ago, or I guess it was a week ago for the F7C Keepstar on anchoring, and we had three full fleets of folks logged in. GOTG was, right before they died, they were calling CTAs every day. You know, and they weren't getting numbers. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean,
fatigue is a real thing, though, even for smaller groups. Like, it's definitely something felt in Wrecking Crew, where like you log in after having gone to sleep, woke up, eaten breakfast, and it's like 15 pings you've missed. So it's all timer stuff, and I think there's like an undercurrent that's highlighted where most of Eve right now is based around timers, as opposed to just logging on, seeing what's going on, going out and doing something with your buddies and going out and fighting the people that are going and doing something with their buddies.
It's funny, I feel like with passive moons, timers were brilliant. However, now that we've got a whole lot more timers in the game, they're grating a little. I think that...
Absolutely. Yeah, they're
good in the right volume.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to be able to say, all right, I know at 4 o'clock on Thursday, I've got a fleet because we got a timer. We're going to go do that. But there's also nothing more fun than when you get those response fleets, the quick response fleets, or you just decide, hey, I'm going to log in and see what my buddies are doing and see who's online and go play with them. And I prefer that kind of PvP because it's not as structured. But there are times when it's nice to say, all right, yeah, I know I get to play with my friends every night, every Saturday at 9 o'clock, as we always, or 10 o'clock, we always have a fleet. But there's room for both of them. And if you get too much of one or too much of the other, it gets kind of stale.
No, absolutely.
That's, you know, one of the big things about content. Like, UFC was a roaming alliance. I mean, the only reason we ever took Sov is because we were on a roam and accidentally took Sov, and we suddenly became Sov holders. But I mean, there's, unfortunately, I love roaming. Filaments have helped a bit, you know, bring back that style. But unfortunately, roaming died. And I mean, you can see it if you go to Delve. You know, you take 10 guys to Delve, and when you jump the gate, there's going to be 4 Onyxes and 15 Supers and Titans on the other side of the gate every single time. And I mean, that style of response has killed roaming for a lot of people. It's led to Nano, and I hate Nano in the game. I think Nano is the worst thing in the game. I miss Brawling Fleets. I mean, when we roam, we still roam Drakes.
I might say that Nano is great, but it's the only thing that you can use, which is why it's so prolific.
It's awful.
Yeah, when you don't have a choice, it's not fun.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, like last night, for example, we had tons of fun. We took, if you look at our kill board, it's horrible right now. We took 13 orcas and filamented them 3 different times. We ended up in Brave Space. We ended up in Frat Space. We filamented again. And then actually, in the first time in Frat Space, we ran into Duras and his guys gate camping, killed him, gave him a procure out of one of the orcas. They joined our fleet and we filamented again. Ended up in more Frat Space. And their response to, you know, 13 orcas, 3 procures, was 2 supers and an 80-man Munin fleet.
I'm shocked.
But I mean, it's the same thing, right? We go to Delve, that happens. We go to Fountain, that happens. You go to any big block space, and that's the response. And then it's funny because, you know, nano gangs and micro gangs complain that they come to our space and it happens. You know, the difference is if we drop a super, well, hey, we have nobody else because that's our super fleet. But you know, it happens everywhere, and you know, we're all responsible for it and we all hate it, but none of us stop doing it. And that has really ruined, like, I miss the 2012, 2013, even up to 2015 days of going out in Rome and having fun. And that just doesn't happen anymore. And a large part of that is Ansiblex's, the ability to get ahead of another fleet instantly, combined with everybody just dropping everything on, you know, a frigate comes in, you take a Condor to Delve and you're going to get a super dropped on you. And that's just ridiculous.
I think a part of this is also just the, this goes into the local too, so a little bit of a different topic, but just the fact that with local, if you're roaming, people immediately know you're there. Immediately. You have no time to get the drop on people and start something. That's kind of a separate issue from just everyone wanting to escalate things, but it means they can do it a lot quicker when, you know, I'm going out with a couple guys, we want to go try to fight some people, hey, maybe we'll tackle a ratter or something. And then maybe some people will warp to them to help save them. Well, they know we're there already, if not several jumps ahead, because they put one guy in system and they can just see us instantly.
Yeah.
They've already people docked up and we're still 2 jumps out. Or we enter system and they've already started warps back to their structure before we barely even have time to start de-scanning to see where they are. So it's a huge issue, like, trying to start these fights when people can save themselves up so quickly. I understand people don't want, like, the blackout, because I understand people, if you make it too risky for people to make money, that's no fun, because we already have an issue with, like, as you guys were talking about, you know, a lot of income equality. But I think we need to minimum reduce local, or, as was brought up earlier, make it something you can remove or take out so that we can maybe have some ability to start fights without immediately getting dropped on.
I mean, you want it to be disruptible rather than you straight up want it perma always gone.
I don't think it should be perma always gone. Yeah, it should be disruptible. Like, yeah, you've got a structure out there, you can go disrupt it, and your reward if you successfully disrupt it is local for, like, I think you should honestly do it not even on a per system, because then by the time you disrupt it, well, they already know you're there. It should be something that affects, like, multiple systems. Like, per constellation, there's one
constellation.
Structure.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Like,
I feel like, sort of, you know, like, the absolute simple no local. That a lot of people who are like, yeah, no local, I can go kill ratters. What ratters if there's no local?
Exactly.
Well,
that's the problem.
Well, let me just tell you, though.
The issue with the main blackout was everybody docked up. So for the first, like, I remember in March, I guess it was March of 2018. I think it was March when we had the chat blackout. That was like a chat server screw up. That was amazing. We went out and killed so much random crap because nobody could see us coming, but everybody knew that it was a bug and that the chat was going to come back up at some point. So they all just stayed out and we were able to get a lot of kills. But when you have a month of no blackout, what happens? People stop logging in. So you're not catching anything. You caught stuff for a week. And then after that, it was kind of like, well, maybe I'll run into another gang that's coming my way and we can have a little brawl. But you weren't out hunting the big assets because they were all docked up.
The thing was, we were finding those fleets that were coming and getting brawls out of them. And that was fun. That was more fun than killing a single ratter.
I'm with Alec on that one. I mean, we loved Blackout. I would be okay with permanent Blackout. We killed a bunch of supers when that happened. But we also, you'd constantly, everyone was roaming. So, every two or three jumps, you'd jump a gate and you'd jump into another roaming gang. So there was a lot of benefit to it. I do like the idea of, constellation-wide devices. I also, though, like the idea that you have to come through a gate to appear in local. I would love to see that filament fleets don't instantly appear in local, and I would love to see that jumping out of a wormhole doesn't put you immediately in local. Jump a gate, sure, there's something that detected you. But if you show up randomly in space, you shouldn't immediately appear in local.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I thought that if you're cloaked because you got your 30-second timer, you should get a 30-second local.
Or you can only appear when you become vulnerable after jumping.
Right. Exactly. We have debated and gone back and forth 1,000 times on the blackout, and it's still highly controversial. My personal view of it was I had fun. I kind of liked it. But I'm not a miner, and I'm not a ratter, and I prefer going out whaling and hunting and taking out fleets and gate camping and doing that kind of stuff. So that was fun for me. But I'm the main PvP guy in a corporation of about 70 or 80 industrialist crab type people, and the blackout decimated my corp. I think we had 60 or 70 guys that were logging in almost every day. And in the span of 2 months, it was cut in half, and now we're down to like 10. So you look at the numbers, by the numbers, you look at the revenue that CCP has lost. Fourth quarter of 2019 was the worst quarter that they had publicly released since they were purchased by Pearl Abyss. It was down millions of dollars over their previous quarter. So it seems obvious to me that no matter how much we liked and thought that Blackout was good, it was overall not good for the game. And that's why I think if we're going to get back to something like that, we need to be tempering it so that it's not permanent. That's why I've been advocating for mini Blackouts, which is exactly what Duress explained, where you have something that you can disrupt that disrupts a constellation or a chunk of a region, but it's not permanent. And people have a choice potentially over whether they have instant local or they have more anomalies, and people can decide what they want to do. Things like that provide at least some of what the blackout provided, but that are not such ham-fisted poleaxing to the skull of the game that the blackout was. As much as we liked it, a lot of people didn't, and those people decided to walk away, and that's not good.
So I just out of curiosity, I'm just spitballing here because I've never thought of this before, but we have D-scan immune ships. What would everybody think of a local immune ship that can't fit tackle but can scout?
I've heard a similar proposal about having a module you can fit to a ship. It would obviously have to have some severe drawbacks similar to a cloak, but something you could fit where basically you do not appear in local for that.
I gotta say, I'm a huge hater of extremely special case ships and modules. Like, for instance, I feel like the ADC to try and make hacks and AFs relevant again is very against the sandbox nature of fitting ships. It's merely required to fit. I don't like that. I don't like the constant suggestion that comes up whenever anybody's like, caps are too strong. I don't like it when somebody says, "Yeah, let's just make a frigate that can only hit caps, but it two shots them." I don't think any of those types of ideas have any useful merit in a well balanced game, and I don't think that a special ship for scouting is a good idea either. I think it would definitely be something to do with local mechanics and disruption, rather than a special ship to do it. That would be a far better solution.
And I think the benefit, you know, for those of us who are on the CSM and are running, the best thing is we don't have to come up with all the ideas. I mean, it's good enough for us to all agree that CCP needs to address this and look at something. And try
I'm
to
sure
get
they're
them
down
to make
for
it a
suggestions,
priority.
Though, even if they're
well,
the ones that develop.
They're always down for suggestions, yeah. But we don't have to come up with something that's you know implementable. As long as we all agree, yes, we think you guys should do some kind of mini blackouts. Come up with something and let us know, and we give them the pressure to put that on the top of the priority list so that they get it done faster. That's as important or more important than coming up with specific use cases and how we're going to do it and what kind of module it would be, or would it be on a ship, or would it be on a TCU, or would it be on a flex structure or something. They can figure that stuff out. But if we all come together and say as a group, this is what you need to work on, that has far more power than us sitting around arguing over what it could possibly be.
I think especially if we can give CCP the vague concept of what it should be rather than this is just a problem, you know?
I mean, I would say, to your point, I would say I'd rather tell them what it shouldn't be than what it should be. Just, I would say, here's what we'd like you to do, but don't do this. And I think that's enough guidance that the CCP Rises and Goodfellas and the rest of the folks that are doing development stuff, that they can figure it out and present.
I mean, when I say
something
concept, I would mean quite a broad concept of what something should represent. But I guess that's what you.
No, I understand
that as well. Yeah.
No, and I do. And I, you know, look, I've made no bones about it. There are current CSM members right now who disagree with me about this, and I think they're wrong, and they think I'm wrong. But in the end, in my experience, the devs have heard almost everything we have come up with or can come up with or think we've come up with. And every time we come up with an idea that we think is new, somebody has gotten there first. So it's never a question of the idea. It's always a question of, is this idea more important than doing something else? And as long as we can, I think that's where we have the most power and we have the most effectiveness for them, is helping them to prioritize what needs to get fixed first. And that's why, you know, I get frustrated with folks who say things like, well, you have to hand them an implementable vision because then they'll know what to do. And no, you don't have to do that.
Well, I wanted to follow up on that, get some of the other candidates involved. One of my closing questions was going to be, what strategy would you employ to get CCP on board with your priorities? How do you influence them? How do you influence other folks in the council to your position? I think Brisk, Phantomite, you guys have a really great discussion around that. Let me pitch it over to Duras.
Wait, did you say Duras or Darius?
Duras.
Okay.
Duras met.
Okay. I mean, I guess we'll kind of split that into two. Like, how do you pitch it to CCP and how do you pitch it to other CSM members? I think for CCP, you just need to make the point to them that, like, this is something that is important to whatever community you're representing. Like, they need to know that it is important and that that it's not just you saying it as a CSM. So to a certain degree, it would be me talking to other wormholers and having chats with them so I can go to them and say, yes, I have talked to, like, you know, X people. They all agree this is crap. And also, here's why. It's always important to show them why it is, as opposed to just me saying, you know, this is bad because we don't like it. Because if I don't give a reason, as far as they know, it's just because I just... whatever, it would just benefit me or get me more. So tell them exactly why. Tell them why, like, why balance-wise this would be bad. Not just because it would be bad for me, why would it be bad for the game as a whole? I think it's important that I can justify any reason I give them about why I want something or don't want something. For other CSM members, I mean, I think a lot of us, we're all pretty much on the same page about, like, we care about what's good for the game as opposed to necessarily what's going to benefit our particular playstyle. We all want to advocate for what we think would make it better. I think as long as you can recognize different people have a different play style, and whatever you're doing, you don't want to screw anyone over in particular. You want to make it as fun enough for everyone. So just making sure that everyone's aware when you're pitching your ideas to them, like, I'm doing this because I want to make things better for me. I'm not trying to screw you over. If you see a reason why this is going to make things unfun for you, let's work out a way that this will work for both of us.
Insert collateral damage joke here.
Yeah, I guess are we gonna bring up the whole wormhole hick rolling thing? Because that's basically an example where there was obviously a lapse in communication about a system that would affect more than it was originally thought.
Oh, no.
Well,
hop on a high horse, there wasn't a lack of communication. They just didn't care.
That's exactly right. We told them flat out, and it was in the minutes, and Rise even acknowledged it, that the wormholers would be the collateral damage if they made that change. And they decided to put it out there anyway. But then, you know, me and a couple other folks made a big enough stink to try to get it fixed. And I think the wormhole community as a whole rose up in open arms and rioting to, you know, to get it fixed. And we were able to push that through within about a week, which was pretty fast. And I was pretty amazed that it got done, which was good. I don't want to be the guy that was on, because Alex, you've been on, so you know. Here's what I suggest is the best way of doing all of this, and you guys could take it to the bank and you know, assuming that everybody here gets elected, you can take what I'm saying at face value, or you can tell me I'm full of shit. It doesn't matter. But in my experience, the first thing, the best way to if you want to get a positive thing done, you want to make a major change, the first thing you got to do is sell it to the other CSM members. You sell it to them, and you have to approach it and approach them with the belief and cutting them enough slack and giving them the benefit of the doubt that even if they represent everything in the game that you don't like, or that even if they are a part of a group that you find to be hurtful to the game or whatever, if you got to go in and assume that that person, that they're there because they love Eve and they want to do what's in the best interest of the game. You start with that philosophy, and then you try to sell your idea and get buy-in from the whole group. If you can get everybody to agree, or at least everybody to say this is a good thing that we should talk about, even if they won't agree with you, not to oppose you when you do it, I think going in unanimous or as close to unanimous as you can be, tell CCP that this is pretty important, because you've got a group of guys or gals, depending on who gets elected, that have diverse play styles for the most part. And even within the NullSec groups, the folks that are on there had diverse play styles, even on my version. Yes, you had three goons that were on there, but they were three goons that did completely different things within goons, for example. You get a wide swath of player representative saying this is important and you guys should focus on that. I think that has more power than one person saying this is the most important thing for my guys, because oftentimes they'll say, well, if I go talk to those guys, are they going to say that that's true? And then they go do that and they find out that it isn't, or that your view of it is not a widely accepted one. You never know. And I think once you get there, once you get the CSM behind you and you're ready to go in and present the idea or talk about it with CCP, I think Duras's point about pointing out why this is good for the game and stuff is exactly the right thing to do, but you got to go beyond that. I think one of the things that it's very easy for CSM members to forget is you're dealing with the developers, you're talking about the game, but this is a business. They are there to make money. They are there to keep their jobs. So when you're presenting a change, even if it's a balance change or something like that, always bring it back to, this is why it's a good change. This is the impact that it will have on the players. This means more people will play the game. There'll be an increase in player retention. It's going to reduce a pain point that causes people to quit. It's going to result in more income. For example, when I talk about skins and corporation skins and alliance skins, I'm like, guys, you're leaving money on the table. And even that hasn't made them want to do it faster. But if you can tie it back to a bottom line type thing, I find that those kinds of arguments tend to work better than simply saying, well, this isn't fair, or I think this mechanic sucks, it's not fun. You know, it's not fun is subjective. It's costing you money is objective. And I think they're much more likely to move if you can make a business case about why you're deciding to, why you want something changed, than if you're just talking about, well, I think it'd be cool if we did this.
Yeah, I'm going to jump on that because that Brisk just stole my answer. I want to, you know, take it back to in the real world. I manage a security research team for a software development company. If I want to do something, I have to write a business case. You know, in product management, there's this concept of personas. And so who are your customers? What are they? What is their use case? Developing personas and being able to meet the goals of each of the different personas of, you know, your users, the managers of your users, those approving purchases, the business itself. And I think a large part of it is, you know, Brisk said, to have a business case. I mean, you have to demonstrate ROI. You have to demonstrate why you're doing something and what the return on investment is. And I think that's, you know, if I get elected, that's one of the key things I want to do. I have to write business cases and I have to prove, you know, right now I want to move my team to a 4-day work week. I have to prove why that's, you know, going to work, why it's beneficial to the company, what kind of gains we have from that in the real world. Another thing that I do is curriculum development for a college. And at the same time, I have to put forward a proposal for why the course should be a certain way. And I don't think the CSM is any different. And again, coming from a software development company, CSP being a software development company, I think that that's important that you're always able to sell your idea with, you know, reasoned, well-logicked background. And that's one of the things that I would definitely be looking to do is apply some of that sort of product management our reasoning experience to the CSM.
Right. Final thing. You can do 3 quality of life changes. These are like the 3 things that you're going to spend the majority of your CSM term advocating for. What are those 3 things? Phantomite, let's start with you.
Ooh, well, the very first one is I'm in a fleet. I need to switch fleets. I would like to just join another fleet in one session change. I would like one session change fleet changing. That would be awesome. It's something that happens frequently because, you know, you join a fleet, the fleet is over, you go AFK, you're still in the fleet. There's a new fleet going up. Oh, we need to be quick. Oh, I need to leave this one first and join the other one. That would be super awesome. I would also like it if I warped to an acceleration gate, either a faction warplex or a dead space acceleration gate. I would love it if... I know in Faction Warfare I can warp at 50 and activate the gate, but I'd love to be able to warp at 0 as well and not bounce impotently off the gate while I'm trying to activate it. That would be really wonderful. And a third one. Ooh, I hadn't thought of a third one. Bear with me. Let me just load up my hangar here. Or I would really love the app on the phone to have a snappy fitting tool on it. That would be awesome. The in-game fitting tool is good, but it's not snappy. It's got a little bit of lag to it, which is why I use Pypher. Obviously, Pypher gives me, you know, more info, but in-game is, I understand why it's a little bit laggy in the communications and things. But yeah, a snappy fitting tool in the app on the phone would be great fun.
Darius Caliente?
Number one is red dots. This is probably stealing from Brisk and several others because everybody is saying it, but give me the ability to turn them off, please. I was talking on DTM stream the other day, and even, you know, little things, even if we can't turn them off right away, when I drag and drop something from my hangar to my freighter, I don't need a new red dot for that. Good concept for new players, poor implementation. So I think that would be the first one. Number two, and I actually just thought of this one today, this morning, actually, when I was sitting thinking about things, I would like the ability, and I think a lot of people would, and we see a lot of wasted in-game cycles from it, to like right-click clear drugs. Now, not in space, so that you could keep rolling mid-fight to get the bonuses you want or to get rid of bad bonuses, but when you're docked up, I watch way too many people before fleets undock who go to another structure, pop a drug, look at the rolls they got, and if they're not the rolls they want, they self-destruct to the other structure, warp back over, pop another one. And that undock, warp, dock, death clone cycle it doesn't do anything to benefit the game. So if somebody's docked up, let's let them just clear their drug penalties and reroll. I think there's some benefit to that. As for a third one, I'm going to go ahead and say this one is completely stolen from Brisk because I hadn't thought of it before, but I like it. And that's the ability that when you set destinations somewhere, that Ansiblexes are included in that route. I think that's a huge one and a huge quality of life change. So I would go with that as the third one.
Brisk?
I've got a ton of these, so I will not repeat the ones that the other guys have said because I agree with all of them. What I would say, I probably say one of the things that I would love to see is an instant potato mode button in the settings. Just push a button and all of your settings are minimized and the sound is turned off so that you don't have to go through and click every little thing every time you're going to do this on four different clients when you're getting ready to get into a big fight. That may not be something that everybody deals with, but if you're in a big NullSec group, you're going to hear from the FC if you're going into a big fight. Yep, potato mode, everybody. And then that creates everybody going in there and doing stuff, and it can cause disconnects and stuff if people are doing it. So I would like to see that. I think that would be a good thing. Second thing, I don't know why they haven't done this yet, and I hope it's not a back-end issue, but I think they should have had a chance to resolve it. But can we get more than one clone in a structure? I mean...
Oh, like, good grief, you know? Yes.
Like, I have a Titan pod, I've got my Trig Mimesis set, I've got, you know, an ass clap set for going around and doing stuff, and I'm constantly tearing out implants, blowing up implants, doing all kinds of stuff because I can only set one at a time. And the other thing it creates is a ton of structure spam of people that put up after houses and smaller structures specifically just to put the clone bay online so they can dump a clone in there. That's just absurd. They need to fix that. You should be able to put a bunch of clones in one structure and not worry about it.
Can you imagine multiple pirate sets at the same time? Make a lot of people
work,
but those pods would be like ridiculously expensive.
That's true.
You know what I'd also really like, Brisk? That would be super cool. You know how we've got freighters for moving large amounts of stuff. We've got jump freighters for jumping huge amounts of stuff. And we've got bowheads specifically for moving ships. And we've got orcas for moving mining gear, that kind of thing.
I would love
a clone moving industrial ship.
That would be interesting.
They've already got the modules
on Titans already to have a clone bay and a Titan. I mean, they should. That shouldn't
Titans
be
and Rorquals.
You know what
that,
I mean? I want to be able to pile 10 5-bill pods into it and fly it riskily so I can move them all at once.
There you go. And the third thing I would say, this is dumb. It's not a substantive thing, but I just. Why the hell can't I ship spin my Titan? I mean, for crying out loud, you know, it's they've been in the game long enough. Let me look at my Titan from all angles.
Yeah, ship tilting isn't the same, is it?
It's not. It's not fun. And plus, you look like the Apostle. You can't zoom that thing out far enough when it's docked up. You can't. The same with a Naglfar. You can't see the whole thing. I mean, can we just fix that a little bit? I know it's going to create, you know, issues, but yeah, let's get to work on that. That's basic stuff people want to be able to do. Anyway, those are my three.
All right, fantastic. And Duras, close this out.
All right, fortunately you guys took some of mine, so this will make it easier for me to decide which ones, but I got lots of small little ones, so I'm trying to decide which ones are the most important. I think, first off, I would love if when, you know, you've got your saves fit together, you've got the ammo load and everything, but you've filled it completely up. So when you go to multi-fit it or fit it up, it does not automatically load things, meaning if you've completely filled it up, it'll then give you a message about, oh, I couldn't actually load everything in, and it then doesn't load the cap boosters because it tried to put the cap boosters in your cap booster in your cargo, which you'd filled. I'd love if it automatically fit those so that I'm not going through my fits and like having to manually like reload everything. That's just a really, really small little thing. I would love that. I don't know if anyone else has experienced this. I would love if when you first enter a system, before it starts showing all of the anoms and signals and everything that basically shows up on that. Yes, yes. And there's times when it's like, I need to see right now. I need to be able to descan right now to figure out where something is. And I have to wait like 10 or 20 seconds for it to finish spinning around to show it. It's like,
it makes a nice little booping noise as it slowly spins around, wasting your time.
Yeah, it's very pretty. And I get like aesthetically why they would do it, but it's like, I need to know right now where this guy is, or I will not be able to catch him, or I won't be able to escape, or whatever. That would be nice. Third, last one. It's gonna be. Do I put a slightly serious one or one that's just a pipe dream?
Do it.
You know what? I'm gonna put this really small but serious one because I don't know if it's ever been brought up before. Sentries and wormholes are just kind of annoying. They have an incredibly, so if you're doing PV in wormholes, they have an incredibly tiny sig on their sentries. And so despite the fact these sentries are standing still, application to them is garbage.
And yep. Our structures as well.
Yeah, their structures. And also they give no loot. So it's this annoying thing that you have to deal with that gives you no benefit to shooting it. And in addition to that, there's a specific gas site that I specifically tell. Basically, we tell everyone that we fly with, like, don't do these because the defenses that spawn at a specific gas site is a ring of about 6 of these, which will pretty much alpha a venture if it warps to it, and they instantly spawn when you warp to it. So it's a pain in the ass. It keeps people from mining specific types of gases unless they want to clear it out. And to clear it out, you will get nothing out of it. There is no blue loot from them. There's nothing. They're basically just a massive annoyance in every anomaly they're at and every gas site they're at. That's just a small quality of life thing I would love to see them either removed or changed. Maybe make them drop some loot so they're worth it. I think those are my 3.
All right, excellent. Artemis?
So, has anyone had a chance to play with the new Triglavian invasion, like high sec is now low sec type stuff?
I want to, but not yet, sadly.
My entire corporation has set off while I've been doing the podcast and managed to lose an entire nightmare fleet in that system.
We were there last night. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, all right. So,
been spending tons of time there and love it.
What are our thoughts?
Frankly, this is one of the better live events that I've seen them do. I think it's fun. I think it's interesting. I'm a trig guy. I love the trigs. I have perfect trig skills. As soon as there's a new trig ship, I buy it. I love those things. I think they all look great. They're fun to fly. So Zoria is my gal. If she needs me, I'm there. And frankly, you know, the fact that they did not release everything about what it is and they're letting players find stuff out, and you have these guys like Arataka and everybody out there doing these crazy deep dives into the backstory, the lore, that's not anything I'm interested in, but I think it's cool that that's available for them to do. So I think the live team deserves a big attaboy for this because I think they've done a great job in creating something that's got everybody talking about it. And even the big NullSec groups like us, I was with a bunch of goons last night. We went and did it. It's got everybody talking about it and wanted to go check it out. So good job on that one, CCP.
Yeah. The trig content as a whole, I think, has been really good. Even before this ability to flip systems, just the invasions were, you know, we don't go and run incursions most of the time because they take a lot of effort and a lot of time, but the trig invasions are a good amount of ISK, or were initially when they came out, still are now. And even that, like, it's a good way that we can go and take a couple hours and have a lot of fun. And so it's nice to see something that doesn't take as much investment as an incursion, but it's still a lot of fun, gets the group together doing group PVE. And I think, you know, the PVE aspects of it, you hear a lot of the people say all the time, I wish there were more opportunities for group PVE. I wish there was more we could do together in this way. You know, you don't, level 4s and level 5s aren't exactly groups things. You don't take a group of people into a sanctum or a haven. So having the PVE side of this is also a great addition to the game for people who enjoy that.
I love the lasting consequences to it. I think that's also a pretty key part of it. I don't know if these security changes will be permanent, but even temporarily, they've really made a killing field out of Raravas, and I love it. That's just really cool.
Now they just got to do it to Nyarja, and I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Oh, man. Maybe Amar would become a viable market again.
Right. Now, granted, I will say this. I hope, and I know this is probably not going to happen, but I think it'd be pretty cool. Wouldn't it be awesome if them messing with the sun like blew the whole system up? I think that would be hilarious.
If they, it this just is wiped how out we make scarcity happen.
Yeah. Just permanently wipe out some road.
You have like this smoking crater of a former high-sec system that just sits there, like CCP. Dead.
CCP just starts deleting systems.
I think that would be cool.
Yeah, the gates to them are just like, maybe that's what the deactivated gate is. The system doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, there's no gates because the system's gone.
Yeah, I like it.
Maybe the system becomes wormhole space.
Ooh.
All advocation is give me more systems.
There you go, right? Because that's all you need right there.
High-sec systems, David, or even low-sec systems, sure. In which you can only get there via wormholes. There's no statics.
That would be... I don't know if it's a good idea, but I'd love to see it happen even if they had to roll it back, just because it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, it'd be fun to see it play out for a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Permanently, you might be able to... It might be bad, but yeah, like, temporarily it could be really cool.
Temporarily, while the factions rebuild the gates.
Alright. Well, I want to thank everyone for turning up today. Phantomite, Briskerball, Darius Caliente, and Duras. I wish each of you luck with your campaign. By the time you are hearing this, dear listener, it will almost certainly be time for you to go vote, so please vote in the CSM elections. Your vote is absolutely vital, as is not just voting for your top candidate, but also put a few down-ballot candidates, because we use single transferable vote. If your first person either can't get in because they don't have enough support, or has so much support that there's like extra votes they have, your voting power is not wasted as long as you have additional candidates on your ballot. I hope that you found this panel informative. Again, I want to thank all the candidates for participating. And wherever you are, whatever you're doing, good hunting, listeners.